Washington is in the midst of a borrowing binge of historic proportions. The U.S. Treasury on Thursday will embark on the final leg this week of a whopping $258 billion sale of new government debt. But that money isn't as cheap as it used to be. Lending rates are hitting multi-year highs as investors demand a higher yield, betting a growing economy, all but ensures the Federal Reserve will keep on raising interest rates.
Swirling hypnotic dishes and masked technicians who perform plant surgery with tweezers. It's all part of a high-stakes effort to control the biggest threat to Canada's most profitable crop, canola plants. This Monsanto lab, one of many scrambling to create seeds resistant to clubroot, a disease that swells the plant's roots, chokes off nutrients, and stunts the growth of its valuable seeds. Clubroot first emerged in Western Canada in the early 2000s. By 2009, Monsanto, as well as rivals Dow DuPont and Bayer AG, had created a clubroot-resistant canola seed, thinking they had it beat.
A terrible week for Snapchat grew a whole lot worse Thursday. Kylie Jenner, part of the famed Kardashian reality TV show clan, single-handedly wiped out $1 billion in Snap's market cap with a single tweet. Jenner told her 24.5 million Twitter followers that she doesn't even open Snapchat anymore, asking, "Does anyone?" The research team at Citi downgraded the stock to a sell on Tuesday, and shares have been plunging ever since.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Hey. It is Friday, February 23rd, 2018. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day, 5:10 in the morning. We've got a great show for you this morning. A little bit later on in the program, Brian Summers will be here. We'll talk a little bit about some airline and aviation news. He's actually sat down recently with American Airlines to talk about how they choose which routes to put up for you to fly on. In a minute, we'll bring in Paul Nolte, too, for our Friday conversation. We'll check over some economic news and our portfolios. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures up 78 points. NASDAQ futures are up about 17. S&P futures are up about 5. Around the globe this morning, markets generally lower in Europe, with the FTSE, DAX, CAC all lower. And in Asia, markets are generally higher, with the Hang Seng up almost 1%, up 301 points. The Nikkei up about 3/4, 156 points. Oil is at $62.45 a barrel, which is down 32 cents. A couple of stories that we're watching for you. You heard there in the opening montage yesterday, Kylie Jenner not happy about Snapchat's new design. The stock of Snap closed down about 6% yesterday after the reality star said she was no longer using the app. The plunge wiped about $1.3 billion. That's B, billion with a B, off of the company's market value. But she wrote, does anyone else not open Snapchat anymore, or is it just me? Ugly. This is so sad. Again, $1.3 billion off of Snapchat. This comes on the same day that we learned that the CEO of Snapchat picked up almost $637 million bonus from the company. Evan Spiegel picked up that payday, one of the biggest for CEOs in a long while, if not near the top of the record list. And another story this morning involving Airbnb, we're learning that the company is dispatching inspectors to rate some of the properties listed on its home rental service in an effort to reassure travelers that they're booking nice places to stay. The Plus program, unveiled yesterday, is aimed at winning over travelers who aren't so sure they can trust the computer-driven system that Airbnb uses to assess the quality of rentals. Airbnb believes that travelers will be willing to pay more for inspector-certified properties, allowing homeowners and apartment dwellers to recoup a $149 fee to participate in Plus. Well, it's our regular Friday discussion with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul's an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager there, and he's on with us every Friday. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be with you again.
Let's talk. I just want to mention briefly again the Snapchat story. And I bet you that story involving Kylie Jenner and $1.3 billion just because of a tweet is probably why we don't invest in startups more often.
No, that's one of the things that we try to stay away from. And actually, we've talked about Snapchat when it first IPO'd. There was a lot of excitement around it, and it's running the same type of a model that Facebook is, and a lot of the other companies are, is looking for that ad revenue. So it's very important to have people on their platform and get a lot of interest in it to keep the advertising revenue coming in. So when you have an instance like this where you have somebody that's very popular that is not using it, it hurts their overall ability to bring in the ad revenue. And when we invest in companies like this, we like to see them operate as a public entity for a couple years before we really get interested in investing in them, because they do operate very differently when they're a public company. Different filings are required by the SEC, et cetera, and you have a little bit better visibility on what a company is doing when they're public versus when they're a private company.
Yeah, and it was this one of those SEC filings yesterday that we learned of the $637 million bonus for the CEO of Snapchat. A lot of people were making a big deal about this yesterday because the company really hasn't made any money for investors yet.
Right, and so that's, again, that's one of the things that we take a look at when we're looking at these companies once they do go public. And that's why I said it takes a couple years for them to really kind of settle in, and we get to see how they operate and what they do. A perfect example in the way we take a look at a company would be a Tesla or even an Amazon. Amazon has been notorious for really not being a very profitable company because they plow back all of their revenues and earnings back into the company. So when you take a look at their earnings or earnings per share, it's very, very small relative to what their stock price is. So their P.E. ratio is very, very high. If you look at it on a per revenue basis, it's not so bad. So there's a lot of different ways to take a look at companies, but we like to see some operations, again, public for a couple of years before we feel more comfortable about investing in them.
Paul, how would you describe the markets this week and economic data that we saw this week?
You know, from the market's perspective, we're interestingly sideways. We've gotten, the markets have been rallying back a little bit, but it doesn't stick. Yesterday was a perfect example, and even the release of the Fed minutes 2 days ago, we had a market that was significantly higher, 150 to 200 points, and then actually finished down 100 points by the end of the day. So we're still seeing volatility. The volatility measure is still relatively high, almost twice what it's been over the course of last year. So we are still experiencing volatile markets, both on the upside and the downside. And I think we're going to be in this type of a market for probably another couple months or so. As investors start to figure out what the Fed is going to do, how high interest rates are likely to go, as interest rates are, I think, are really more driving this market than it is earnings or economic data. The economic data has been good. The Conference Board came out with their LEI numbers, the leading economic indicators still point to expansion. A lot of the other numbers that we look at are still pointing to good U.S. Economic growth. And that, I think, is really what has investors worried, because now the flip side of that is the Fed is going to be raising rates. We're now expecting 4 rate hikes, about a 35% chance of that occurring, whereas a month ago that was below 20%. So investors are a little more concerned now about a higher interest rate environment as being a competition for the equity markets.
We're on with Paul Nolte this morning from Kingsview Asset Management. We'll continue with our regular Friday conversation right after we check traffic this morning here on the opening bell.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. A mixed market on Thursday left the Dow Jones ahead nearly 165 points at 24,962. The NASDAQ composite lost 8 points. The S&P 500 advanced 2.5 to finish the session at 2703. Japanese airbag maker Takata has reached a $650 million deal to settle consumer protection claims from 44 states and the District of Columbia over defective airbag inflators blamed for at least 20 deaths. Only a fraction of the money will actually be paid because of Takata's bankruptcy. Toys R Us reportedly is closing another 200 stores and cutting staff at its headquarters. A new round of social media posts about the potential closures and layoffs comes as the toy retailer struggles to convince customers and vendors that it has a viable future. And Subway is changing its loyalty program. The sandwich chain wants to revamp its image, attract more customers in the face of falling sales, so customers who spend $50 will earn $2 discounts. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We're on with Paul Nolte this morning from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. I know, Paul, last week we talked to you, we were concerned about the bond markets. Have things settled down at all in the bond markets?
Not too much. As you mentioned at the top of the program, that we're auctioning off an awful lot of bonds. This is a big bond week for auctions. So they're auctioning off 10-year, 5-year, 2-year, 30-year bonds. And the bond yields have picked up some as they use the yield actually to attract investors. The higher the yield, the more investors would be interested in picking up the bonds. So we're seeing interest rates tick a little bit higher here, and that's providing a little bit of competition here for the equity markets.
We had also been watching international and emerging markets. The markets this week have been kind of up and down, especially in Asia. I know they've been dealing with holiday time there, but Europe is lower again this morning. What's happening internationally?
Internationally, when we take a look at how it translates back to the U.S. Investor, so an investor in the U.S. is also concerned about how the dollar is moving. And the dollar has strengthened a little bit this week, but not too terribly much. But over the last year or so, the dollar has been significantly weaker. And so we do still like the international markets. We're seeing good growth from a lot of those countries. They're not as dependent on commodities as they used to be. Their debt levels, actually, from a sovereign perspective, from a country perspective, is a lot less than many of the developed countries. The developed countries are the ones with the big debt problems, so us, Japan, Germany, et cetera. So when you take a look at those countries, they're in much better shape going forward than, say, the U.S. might be. So we still like emerging markets an awful lot. The developed markets we still do like, mainly because of the weaker dollar. Their valuations also a lot less than the United States. So if you have to be in the equity market, I think really want to put your money internationally. And that also shows up in a lot of the fund flow data for mutual funds and ETFs. Investors have pulled money from the U.S. and actually have put more money internationally.
Back to the inflation and interest rate story for a minute. The Treasury Secretary yesterday said that rising wages will not necessarily mean more inflation. I kind of scratched my head at that a little bit. What's he talking about?
Well, here's the way that has to work. If the companies are paying you more money in the way of wages, and they're not raising prices on the other side, that means by definition they're accepting a lower margin and maybe lower earnings. Right now, the margins for corporations are near historical highs. So they're making a lot of money on the dollar that they're selling off of the products that they're selling. So if companies are willing to accept lower margins, then that is true. So that's the trick as to whether companies are going to be willing to accept less profitability on their dollar of sales going forward than they have over the last decade or so. So it's going to be a trick to see if that actually gets pulled off. But that's the only way that we don't wind up with higher inflation with higher wages is if companies are accepting lower margins and lower earnings then.
Yeah, I can't imagine investors would be happy allowing a company to not make money. That seems counter.
No, and that's really the part of the corporation. Then, when they take a look at it from an earnings perspective, that means their earnings growth rates are slowing down, and that will take a hit to the equity market. So it's good for the worker; they're making more money. But for the investor, that could be problematic, again, with a higher interest rate backdrop on top of lower profitability for companies. We could see the PE of the market, which is now 18.19 come down to 14.15, and that means that the markets could come down 15-20% over time if this were to play out.
All right, Paul, good conversation. We'll see you again next week.
Absolutely. We'll see you then.
All right, have a great weekend.
Take care.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. You can find more about Paul and his colleagues at kingsview.com on the web.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's InnoMinute Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by chicagoinno.com. Pause App, a Chicago startup that launched last month, wants to reduce the anxiety and depression that can come from overusing social media. Pause App monitors a person's usage on Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram, and alerts them when they've exceeded healthy amounts of time on each site. Sterling Bay finalized its $510 million purchase of the Montgomery Ward Building at 600 West Chicago. The building, known for being Groupon's headquarters, has become a tech hotspot in recent years as it holds several top tech companies, including Echo Global Logistics, VC firm Lightbank, Tempest, and Uptick. And can blockchain save journalism? Block Club Chicago, a new media site from former DNA Info editors, is using a publishing platform on the blockchain to let people pay for news with Bitcoin and other cryptocurrency. That's today's InnoMinute Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Thanks for being with us today. Lots to talk about in the world of aviation this morning. Brian Summers is airline business reporter for Skift, joining us on Skype this morning. Brian, here to talk about a couple of things. Brian, I know you've been writing recently about how airlines pick the routes that they fly. Specifically, you've been talking to American Airlines.
Yeah, I did. I visited American headquarters a couple weeks ago in Dallas-Fort Worth, and really the way airlines choose their routes is pretty self-explanatory. They're looking for where they can make the most money. That sounds sort of funny, but a lot of people out there think that airlines want to start routes maybe because they're the sexiest and they're the most fun. And something that I talked about with American is just what they see as far as what we call ultra long haul flights. So some people may notice United now has a lot of flights that are 16, 17, 18 hours in the air. Flights like Los Angeles to Singapore and Houston to Sydney. And for United, they've calculated that those are going to make money. American is going a different route. They really don't want to fly more than 14, 15, 16 hours unless they absolutely have to. So they have a flight from Dallas-Fort Worth to Hong Kong, but that's about it. They've decided that routes like Philadelphia to Venice are just a better use of resources. So they're going to fly in the 6 to 14 hour range and not worry so much about setting records like United is.
What do you think is at the heart of this? Because they pretty much have the same aircraft, don't they? So it's not that.
Yeah, United is using the 787-9 on a lot of these long routes. American has the same plane. They're configured a little bit differently. I mean, they're not exactly the same model, but it's the same idea. It's just a different approach to trying to make money. United has always been very successful in the Asia-Pacific region, Australia, China. American has always focused on Europe, and American's now the world's largest airline, so that they know they need to expand a little bit in Asia and Australia, but just not as much. So American is going to focus on Europe, they're going to focus on South America and some of the larger cities in Asia, but probably not, what we would say interior China. So they'll focus on Shanghai and Beijing. United has a route to Chengdu. I wouldn't expect American to launch Chengdu at any point.
You mentioned the sexy flights versus non-sexy flights. South Bend, Indiana is a beautiful place to be and live, but it's not necessarily a sexy flight all the way to Venice, is it?
Yeah, we've talked about this before. Airlines are making an emphasis in smaller U.S. cities right now. They had left them Airlines like United and American had decided that the South Bends of the world were just not that interesting. They would rely on customers in Chicago. If somebody from South Bend wanted to fly, they could just drive to Chicago. The calculus has changed. And right now, you know, you mentioned American, they want to fly to South Bend. And, you know, they want people to fly from South Bend to Europe with a stop in one of their hubs. And it's really not, of course, for that nonstop traffic. I mean, nobody's going to really fly from South Bend, say, to Chicago. But it's the question of where you can go once you connect in Chicago.
It still surprises me when I see the number of daily flights that airlines do. American has about 6,500 of them. And not all of them are profitable, are they?
No, but it's funny. We had this discussion with American when I was there. Airlines use this euphemism to talk about unprofitable flying. They call it strategic flying. And there are some flights that airlines have calculated that they must fly, whether they make money or not. And oftentimes, you know, it depends on a big corporate customer, perhaps. You know, if you are in if you're in San Francisco and you're the biggest airline in San Francisco and you want to attract Apple as your client and you want Apple to fly you all over the world, then maybe you have to fly to whatever city in China is closest to their factory, whether that particular flight makes money or not, because you want those people to fly your airline also to New York. So that's sort of how it works.
And this is sort of kind of a geeky thing to read about is the flight numbering, how they come up with the numbers of flights.
Yeah, the flight numbering thing is fun. So years ago, actually not that many years ago, most airlines numbered their flights by hand. So somebody in the network planning department at American might say, all right, you know, flight 35 is going to be Chicago to Los Angeles. But as you mentioned, American has 6,500 flights a day right now. And so the idea of numbering all those flights by hand is just insane. So American has a machine that does it for them. The machine works with certain parameters. So you'll notice there really isn't a American flight 666, and they don't generally reuse flight numbers from previous crashes, but otherwise it's almost all done by machine, except that there are some famous flight numbers that are basically grandfathered in. So that's why New York to LA, for example, is flight number one and probably will always be flight number one.
Let's talk about something else you've been writing about. That's American's competitor, Chicago's hometown airline, United, and this Polaris flight, that this affair that really has never kind of matched what they said it was going to be.
Well, you know, United would dispute that, but I think that we all remember in June 2016 when United CEO Oscar Munoz took the stage at a theater in New York and said, we're going to have this brand new Polaris service. It's going to be more luxurious than what we've had before, and customers are going to sleep very well. And, you know, it hasn't exactly worked out as United had hoped. United had always said it was going to take a long time to retrofit the planes and to add these lounges. But, you know, by some accounts, it's probably taken a little bit longer than anyone expected. And then so you tie that to the fact that some of the onboard elements that they promoted a couple of years ago haven't worked either. So there was a big deal about United bringing a Bloody Mary cart for morning flights. And recently, United said they're going to get rid of the Bloody Mary cart. And they say this, and I generally agree with it. They said, people don't really want the Bloody Mary cart. It takes a long time for the flight attendants to serve the drinks. If you're waiting for your gin and tonic, the pomp and circumstance of the cart just slows you down because you have to wait for people to have their Bloody Marys before you have your gin and tonic. And so United said, look, the cart's going to go away, but we'll still make all the drinks you could have had before.
If people out listening are not following you on Twitter, they should, at Brian Summers. I do. And I saw a little tweet you had, I think earlier, maybe last week, where the pilot was asking for a veterinarian.
Yeah, this just happened to be earlier this week. We've talked about, I think, emotional support animals. I'm not sure that this was an emotional support animal. I don't know what it was. But I do know that I was on a Boeing 777 this week, and the flight attendant got on the PA and made the announcement that a lot of people have heard very often, except instead of, do we have a doctor on board, it was, do we have a veterinarian on board? There wasn't a whole lot of other information given, but one of the flight attendants told me that a cat was having a hard time.
Oh, boy. Is this a first for you?
It is a first for me, and I fly all the time.
That's cool. Isn't it great that there can always still be firsts for somebody like you?
Absolutely. That's why I love air travel.
Brian, thank you. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Steve.
Brian Summers is an airline business reporter for Skift. That's at Skift on Twitter. And make sure you sign up for the weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report. Comes via email to your inbox. And you can find that at skift.com/airline.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures up now 100 points. NASDAQ futures up 23. And S&P futures up 7 as we head toward the opening bell at 8:30 Chicago time this morning. Let's get an update now on agriculture and other commodities. And Orion Samuelson is with us. Good morning, Orion.
And good morning to you from the desert in Arizona, where I got laryngitis, Steve.
Oh, boy. Does it hurt? It sounds like it hurts.
Not a cold, not hurting. But, man, my voice yesterday afternoon about 3 o'clock just kind of fell apart. So, anyway, we'll get it fixed. And as far as the markets are concerned, again, we're looking at weather in Argentina continuing to be a major concern for the soybean crop. And now the latest long-term forecasts for Argentina and the soybean producing area of that country says that they'll stay dry for the month of March. And so we're very concerned about that because they produce and export more soybean meal for livestock feed than any other nation in the world. So we're keeping an eye on that. As a matter of fact, yesterday it sent our soybean prices yesterday. Where did they go? Okay, the soybean. It's amazing how things can disappear when they're right on your desk in front of you. But soybeans yesterday dropped 2¾ cents a bushel, and November soybeans dropped a penny a bushel. On the other hand, wheat yesterday gained 3½ in the March contract, and corn ended a penny higher. And as far as livestock is concerned, live cattle yesterday at the Mercantile Exchange lost ground for a second day in a row as we watched lower cash prices weigh on the futures market. And then there were sell stops and fund liquidation contributing to market declines as well. But February live cattle, which will expire on February 28, closed $1.30 a pound lower in yesterday's trade. So, and of course, it's the final day of the USDA Agricultural Forum in Virginia, right across the Potomac from Washington. And yesterday, Secretary of Agriculture Perdue was keynote speaker. And so they are looking at these projections, Steve, on the planting and pricing. And interestingly enough, we are going to plant exactly the same amount of acres to corn as to soybeans. We'll be putting in 90 million acres of soybeans this spring, down slightly from last year. And corn acres will go to 90 million acres, down from 90.2 million last year. So some minor changes in the projection, and today we'll get to the price projections for the year 2018.
I was going to ask about that story. How often does that happen where we see the equal plantings come out in that report?
I can't remember. I really can't, because we've typically produced more corn than soybeans. But again, the pricing at this time of the year will sort of have an impact on how many acres we plant. And on the last Friday of March, about a month from now, we will get the planting intentions from the survey taken by farmers across the country. We'll see how close the projection this week comes to the final projection on the end of March.
All right, Orion, have a good weekend and take care of that voice.
Will do, sir. And you have a good weekend.
All right. Thank you, sir. 5:56 now here in the opening bell. Before we leave you, we're going to just check in on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook. Nothing in the way of major economic reports today, but boy, do we have a lot of Federal Reserve folks out speaking today. William Dudley, Loretta Mester is out there. John Williams also. We're expecting now four, as you heard Paul Nolte talk about earlier in the opening bell, four interest rate hikes this year. Chances of that now up above 35%. So we'll bet monetary policy will be among some of the top comments of some of these speakers out today. And also, it is another day of earnings. We'll see some of that continue. And the Olympics are wrapping up in South Korea. So just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, February 23rd.